This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Good afternoon, folks. With you until 1 o'clock, Gas House Gang, every weekday 12 to 1 on KMOX. Today, it is Mike Claiborne. We've got Brendan Schaefer, contributor to STL Sports Central and host on KTGR out of Columbia with us. I'm Chris Ranji, and we appreciate all of you for being with us. You can text in if you want, 314-436-7900. You can also, if you want to watch this show, you can on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter. Gentlemen, good to see you. And I mean, gosh, there's so much to get into. But since we have Brendan, who is with us now, and we saw Mizzou take a pretty good beating at the hands of Texas A&M over the weekend, and they've got Mississippi State coming up here. Let's first start with that loss, Brendan. I mean, none of us were really surprised that it ended up happening that way. But does the game itself say anything bigger about Mizzou this season or the program in general?
Yeah, it's really tough, Chris, because you're on your third string quarterback, and I think a lot of Mizzou's ability to contend in that game with the number three team in the country was going to come down to what Matt Zollers might give you in his first collegiate start. And clearly, he didn't give him much. 7 for 22, 77 passing yards, I think 74 of which went to Donovan Olubide. So it was very limited attack offensively. He looked overwhelmed, but that's a really good A&M defense. The degree to which they kind of knew what was coming at times maybe harmed Missouri's ability to move the football there. And Mike Elko saying, yeah, I don't know anything about that. But it seems that Mizzou was just a little overwhelmed, a little outmatched in that one. And I'm going to be interested to see another opportunity from Zollers against a lesser defense in Mississippi State, but certainly it's disappointing to see, obviously, the playoff dreams, slim though they may have been, officially die last Saturday in Columbia.
Oh, we're having a difficulty getting to Claves. We'll see if we can reestablish something there. Let me ask you then about this, Brendan, because there's a lot of conversation about Eli Drinkwitz, and I've heard from some Mizzou fans who say, why are we even talking about an extension here? They don't have any big wins against winning programs in the conference. Is he really worth it? You have others who say, Florida might be taking a look at him. And you've got these other blue blood programs that are interested. What is your take on him and what Mizzou should try to do with him moving forward?
Yeah, Chris, I think Mizzou should be doing everything in their power to get Eli Drinkwitz what he thinks he needs to win at Missouri, whether that's, additional NIL funding guarantees, whether that's more salary for the coaching pool, like whatever he thinks he needs. I'm of the camp that you try to keep him, because you look at what he's done over the last few years. He has elevated Mizzou to a program that now we're disappointed because we're falling short of the playoffs. So I'm in the camp of definitely looking to keep him, but I'm also in the camp of, yeah, I think some of these rumors in the coaching carousel talk is probably pretty real. Places like Florida, Penn State, and maybe others that are coming after him. It's not going to come down to money, I don't think. I think Missouri and the admin understand what Drink has brought to the table here. It's going to come down to Eli Drinkwitz deciding if this is a place that he truly sees him being able to fulfill the goals that he has on a national scale. And whether or not it can happen at Missouri is, I guess, a decision he's got to come to terms with ultimately, Chris.
I guess the issue here is this, and this is to me the underlying situation, and that is Mizzou has, at this point, and this could change, if they have 5-10 years of success, I mean, in a row, that could change a lot. But there are some inherent obstacles, I think, for Mizzou to be a program that rivals some of the other SEC schools. I mean, like Georgia or Alabama, you're not there. What can they provide for him to help him or any coach? Because if we're talking about replacing him with somebody else, or let's not make that extension happen, let's just go get someone, what is better out there for them?
Yeah, you're talking about an unknown for sure. If Drink ends up going somewhere and you're trying to hire, obviously there's support financially to make him one of the highest paid coaches in the country. He's top 10 or 12 as it stands now on the current extension that he is operating under. But I really do think it comes down a lot to NIL, and that has been a positive in Columbia in recent years. But now with the revenue sharing system that's come into play, and the terms are changing a little bit on that front, I wonder if there's not that need to maybe make the next level commitment from the powers that be that can provide that funding and make sure that, yeah, are you going to operate on the level of a Georgia when it comes to NIL? Maybe not quite, but if you can kind of get into the top half of the SEC comfortably, is that enough to get Eli Drinkwitz to say, all right, I think this is a place where I've got the resources to be able to do it? But it is difficult too, Chris, when you consider 9-game SEC schedule coming next season, a lot more daunting in terms of the annual tests the Tigers will have from a scheduling perspective.
It just seems like, you know, you had that game against Alabama, which is a real big missed opportunity for them. And now they're probably destined for what? Another Music City Bowl or something like that. And that's not nothing. Of course, if you're a program like Missouri, you've got to reach a bowl game at least at the end of the year, even if it's not a CFP game. Would you consider that then a success, if that's what it is, if it is something like a Music City Bowl?
I think if you would have told me that for the month of November, you wouldn't have Bo Prabula or Sam Horn available for any of those games, and Matt Zollers was the guy you're starting for an entire month, and you go, say, 8-4 and end up in a decent bowl like that, I would have been disappointed, because I thought this was a year where it is potentially a CFP bid the way the schedule lined up, and Drink came into the season saying, this is the most talented group I have had at Missouri. But when you consider, I mean, Matt Zollers didn't even play his senior year of high school, Chris. And so it was going to be a long shot if you would have told me that information. So, yeah, I would take the 8-4 and say continue to build, continue to keep that momentum going. That's how I would feel about it.
Brandon Schaefer is with us here on the Gas House Gang, trying to reestablish connection. We're having some technical issues with Mike Claiborne, who is here. He's present. I can see him. We can all see him. But we're going to talk to him shortly. We've got Diego Gigliani coming up here. He is the team president for City SC and the general manager, because we got some pretty big MLS news yesterday in that they are changing the schedule for the 2027-28 season. Instead of starting in February, March, and ending in the season ends in October, it's going to be flipped now, where they're going to get started in mid-July. There'll be a winter break where they have none of January, no games in January, parts of December and February they'll be taking off, and then the postseason will be in May. So, Klabes, what do you think of that? This now coincides with the FIFA schedule.
Can I back up and talk a little bit about Mizzou for a second?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I got a few things to say here. All right. First of all, there's no excuse for what happened against Texas A&M. You had a week off. You had time to prepare your quarterback. And if there's nothing else, you shorten the playbook. You rush for over 200 yards against one of the best teams in the country. And you tell me a team that wouldn't take 200 yards against one of the best teams in the country and turn out the way they did. I thought it was more of a poor planning than anything else. You knew that A&M was going to blitz a freshman quarterback. You knew that they were going to bring everything early just to show him some looks he hasn't been familiar with. But when you have a team that's rushing for 200 yards, why don't you just keep pounding it? And by the fourth quarter, maybe they start to step up closer to the line of scrimmage, and then you can go up top. So I really felt like Missouri – coaches let that young man down. The other thing, you mentioned Florida is having some interest in Eli Drinkwitz. I don't know where you got that from. I know everybody likes to throw his name around, but I was with one of the biggest boosters Florida has recently. And you know what he said to me? He said, Eli Drinkwitz is the flavor of the month until you look at who he's beaten. And and that's one of the things that Florida is going back and forth on. And the other thing is this. Eli Drinkwitz has it pretty good here in the state of Missouri. I mean, they have given him a lot of things. He's the number one, only Division I major program in the state. You go to Florida, not only are you going to play the SEC, but here comes Miami knocking at your door. Here's Florida State saying they want to crack at you. Here's Central Florida that wants a piece of you. And you think you can handle that? And you haven't beaten anybody of nationally ranked yet? I think Columbia, Missouri is the best place for Eli Drinkwitz, and I think he can get this thing going in the right direction. But I thought last week, I thought he and his staff let that kid down.
I think the job that actually would worry me for Drink is more Penn State, because of all the reasons you said, where he wouldn't have to face that SEC schedule if he did leave for that. And I know that coaches have an ego. They're not worried about, oh, my schedule's going to be too tough. But that would be a little more attractive, where as long as you don't do what James Franklin did, you start to lose to the UCLAs of the world. I think James Franklin, yeah, fans would have said, oh, we want more. But I think James Franklin could have kept that gig if he hadn't started losing the games he ain't supposed to lose. Drinkwitz has at least won the games he's supposed to win. And, yeah, he hasn't beaten anybody he's not supposed to beat. A&M was one of those games, and you're right. I thought coaching to end the first half, that fumble that made it 14-0 instead of 7-0 was a killer. And then to get fooled like that on a fake punt was another coaching blunder, no doubt.
Yeah. So I've said my piece on that. I expect Missouri to beat Mississippi State this weekend. But, you know, it was interesting. I was doing a podcast with Howard Richardson, Kerry Davis, a two-color analyst for Missouri and Illinois.
Yeah, they're great.
And Kerry Davis made a great point. He said, what happens if Missouri and Illinois went out for the rest of the season? So then neither one of them is going to be in the playoffs. But wouldn't that be a great bowl game, Missouri and Illinois?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I take that over, you know, some of the other situations they would be involved in. So I think that on that line more than I think about, you know, what's next for Mizzou. I think Missouri's going in the right direction, but they got to turn some things around.
That scenario you're talking about, that would be the only thing I think that would interest both fan bases enough to get them actually excited, because they both know that they're not getting a football playoff. They're not going there. So, well, hell, if you tell me it's going to be an Illinois-Mizzou bowl game, all right, I'm in. I think you automatically gain a ton of interest just by making that happen.
And then somebody's on the hot seat on having to beat somebody at that point.
Yeah, that's right. So they will play tomorrow, 6:45, Mississippi State. So we got the evening contest. And before we get, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little Cardinals here during their offseason. But any thoughts on the MLS schedule?
Well, yeah, I think it's good for the MLS. I think what it's also going to do is create competition as far as being able to get players from other parts of the world, because they're going to be in their regular league at that point. So it's going to be a challenge for the league. And you know what? I think the league needs a challenge. I think we've seen enough of it now to say, okay, this is a pretty good Division III or IV level soccer league compared to the rest of the world. So how do you grow that brand? I think we're going to have to find out, because now you're going to have to spend some money on competition when it comes to players. And City hasn't spent a lot of money on players, so they're going to be on the clock real early in this situation.
Yeah, and Brendan. Yeah.
Oh, I think it makes sense. A lot of soccer fans have always wanted it to kind of match the bigger leagues in terms of schedule. Yes. And it feels like something that was probably a long time coming.
For me, I like the fact that it doesn't totally coincide with the baseball season now. There are going to be some overlap, but it doesn't run exactly along with Cardinal season. I think that frees up quite a bit. It's, to me, I wanted it, and I'm glad they're going to do it, and it should be good for the league. At least I hope it will be. Mike Claiborne, Brendan Schaefer, Chris Ranji on the Gas House Gang, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. We do have Diego Gigliani coming up to talk about that schedule change, the calendar change. We'll talk City SC with him. That's around 12:45, maybe a little bit sooner than that. We'll talk to Diego coming up. But this is the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Gas House Gang on KMOX, Mike Claiborne, Brendan Schaefer, Chris Ranji. The Cardinals offseason, it's been well underway for a while, but the World Series has been over for a bit now, too, which means that with the GM meetings happening this week, that stuff will start to get busy, hopefully here soon. You never really know when things are going to really pop off here. But Brendan, Claves and I have talked about the offseason quite a bit. I think we even started talking about it before the season ended. But what you think the Cardinals might end up doing and how aggressive they're going to be, not that they're going to do a bunch of addition here, but certainly the roster is going to look different in 2026.
Yeah, I think the writing's been on the wall since that last home game of the season, where we stood by Nolan Arenado's locker and heard him talk about his time with the Cardinals in more of a past tense, that a trade is coming there. I don't know how wide he's going to have to expand that list to make it happen relative to last year, but I definitely expect that. The Cardinals hoping to probably not have to eat all of the money there, but we'll see the way that ends up lining up. But you're right, that's a subtraction that's going to be made. And I really do feel like Brendan Donovan gets moved. He is the player that has probably the most trade value for the Cardinals, and he's in that tricky spot where he's got 2 years remaining before he's eligible for free agency. And if you're the Cardinals and you don't intend to offer him a contract extension, which would be my preferred method of handling this, I think this is a guy that you build around. But I don't think the team is in a mode, Chris and Mike, where they're necessarily looking to do that right now. And so if you're not going to do that, can you get a controllable arm for him and put somebody in the rotation that can help out the pitching? Because we know that's been a deficiency recently. So, like, I think they're going to make some of those types of subtractions, and hopefully in so doing might be able to recoup some arms to help them restart that that pitching rotation.
Well, I agree that, you know, they're going to be looking for arms. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Excuse me. Now, the question is, what kind of arms are you looking for? You know, we have a lot of guys that do the same thing currently. So maybe you're looking for guys who have more swing and miss stuff. Maybe you're looking for guys who are right on the cusp of being in the big leagues. You're definitely going to want to have control over them for a while, because this process of rebuilding, I think, can happen a lot sooner than some people do. But with that said, you're going to have to part company with people who you're familiar with seeing. And some of those guys were pretty good, and some of those guys weren't very good. But at some point, there are going to be some new faces here, and I don't think I'm going to get in the way of that. I've seen what we have, and I think we know what they are and who they are. And they may go elsewhere and be really dynamic players. And if they do, then good for them. But at some point, you have to make some adjustments with this current situation.
Yeah, and Donovan seems to be the guy everybody's talking about now. Derek Gould wrote about him this week in the Kansas City Royals. Cleveland has some interest, apparently, in him. Some teams might have some interest in Lars Nootbaar, but Alec Burleson is the guy that a lot of people bring up, and that's one that I really think you'd hate to part with him. However, I don't know that they're in a position where they've got guys you just absolutely have to hang on to, right?
No, there's not a person on this roster that isn't tradable for the right person, okay? It's not like you have a list of guys that are untouchables. You know, we used to have situations like that where you had untouchables. You know, there was a Pujols and there was a Molina and people like that. There's no untouchable on this ball club. So if you can get some players that are better than what you currently have, then you know what? That's part of business. That's part of the game. And, you know, when we talk about players making a lot of money, you know, this is part of the reason why you get paid a lot of money, because you have to deal with these inconveniences of moving along. And if that's the case to make your ball club better, then so be it.
It feels more like the path of least resistance to hold on to a guy like Burleson, right? He's team controlled. He just won the Silver Slugger at the utility spot. And so that's a guy that, what are you actually accomplishing if you move him? Unless you're accessing some of what Klaibs mentioned, which is that swing and miss from starting pitching. But I think as much as swing and miss is something they'd love to have, they might end up having to shop on a little bit of a lower shelf, just because some of the guys they're looking to trade do have salaries attached. And so unless the Cardinals are willing to eat a bunch of money, maybe you're not getting as high quality of a return, and you have to kind of figure out what the balance is with that. I do think, though, with names like Nootbaar, names like Donovan, you can pick up, hopefully, a pitcher, maybe more than one, that can help you in the 2026 season. I don't know if that's, as Klaibs said, guys who are on the cusp, or like with the Royals mentioned, they've got a guy, Noah Cameron, who broke onto the scene this past season. Now, he did not demonstrate a lot of that swing and miss, but he had good numbers for the Royals and a ton of team control because he was a rookie this past season. So as you're trying to build this back up, I think you have a wish list, and swing and miss is on there. I'll be very curious the degree to which Heim Bloom is maybe willing to sacrifice some of that just to get these arms that he thinks can at least kind of set the foundation for your rotation, along with guys like McGreevy and Libertor in house.
And you know, the other thing, we can't overlook the fact that this ball club needs more slug. Okay, we didn't hit a lot of home runs. We didn't have a lot of doubles. I mean, we four hit ourselves into a run in some cases, it seemed like. So you're going to have to find some slug too, because if you look at postseason, you look at Toronto, you look at the Dodgers, you look at some of those other teams. Man, the reason why they got as far as they did is because they could slug. And you have to come to grips with that, and you look at your lineup, and you just didn't have enough of that there.
Yeah, they were second to bottom in home runs this past season. I think it was only the Rockies were worse than them, and the Padres were just in front of them. But that was one of the only teams, only playoff teams, that was near the bottom in hitting home runs. But the Padres, what they can do is they can pitch. And you can get away with that. You can get away with not having power. you just make it a whole lot more difficult, and you have to make sure that your pitching is pretty much lights out. That's the only way you can get away with that.
Yep, I agree.
I do wonder about the notion of chasing slug if you're the Cardinals because of playing your home games at Busch, which is known to be a pitcher's park. Is that something that obviously you want more of it, and it makes you successful to score runs if you have it, but if they go about it the wrong way where it's you sell out for that and you bring a guy in who looks like a slugger, but then he plays half his games at Busch and suddenly he's not, could they end up kind of chasing their tail on that would be, I guess, a concern of mine. And so maybe you do say, we've got to start with the pitching. If we're going to do it at a ballpark like Busch, kind of like the Padres have been able to find some success, pitching, get guys on base, and play really good defense. Like, that sounds like the kind of Cardinal baseball I think the fans would appreciate, but how close are they to actually accomplishing a roster that looks like that is a fair question.
Yeah, it is a good question. And I think when you look at that, you have to say, A, most important thing. B, the ability to generate offense. Now, that means slug. That means being able to obviously run the bases, steal some bases, because stolen bases, you know, you don't appreciate them until you don't have them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have those situations in play, and the Cardinals have played really good defense, they were pretty solid there. But, you know, you have to have the ability to be able to manufacture runs. But I'm of the belief that if the Cardinals were better on the road, if they slugged better on the road, they probably would have been in postseason. The home situation wasn't an issue. It was the road that really got to them because they just weren't out able to slug in certain ballparks.
Just have to refresh my memory here, but was it Matt Holliday before he came here that people were like, or some people were, well, you know, he was great in Colorado. Just wait till he gets to St. Louis, see if those numbers carry over. And they, you know, they did. I don't think he hit as many home runs here per year, but still a really productive player, right? I mean, oh, yeah. It's just such a weird thing. If a guy's good, he's good.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing about Holliday. We looked at Holliday as this big hulking outfielder. But, you know, Matt Holliday was a pretty good hitter.
Yeah.
And you know, he never hit 40 home runs or anything like that here in St. Louis, but he was always able to put the ball in play. He could find himself at second base a lot of times. Could he hit home runs? He did, and he hit a lot of home runs on the road. But I always felt Matt Holliday was a better hitter than he was a power hitter.
Yeah, he was a line drive guy. I mean, he would hit the line drives, and sometimes they'd go over the fence.
Yep. Hey, Brendan Schaefer, it's good to talk to you, man. Thanks for jumping on with us today.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Brendan Schaefer with us, STL Sports page, and also you can hear him on KTGR.
STL Sports Central.
STL Sports Central, that's right.
Central.
That's right, STL Sports Central. Sports page is Rob Raines, right? STL Sports Central, know. Brendan Schaefer. KTGR Radio in Columbia. Thanks, Brendan. Mike Claiborne, still with us for a few more minutes. We got a conversation with Diego Gigliani coming up as well on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Mike Claiborne, Chris Ranji. The Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com. Just talk a little football with Danon Hughes during the last hour. He's the Chiefs radio analyst and wide receiver. And when is the last time?
Northern Iowa.
Yeah, great, dude. I mean, he played baseball, too. Really,
yeah, he's
good,
a good athlete.
Really good baseball player. And I was looking at the Chiefs being 5-4. And we've got the Chiefs Broncos on Sunday, by the way, 2:00 pregame, 3:25 kickoff. And I don't know the last time I've seen a 5-4 team still be the Super Bowl favorite 10 weeks in.
You know, I think probably because everyone thinks when they get everyone healthy and together, they've been through the war before, so they kind of understand how this works as far as pace is concerned. But I don't know if that's going to be enough because, you know, there's still some question marks. And the biggest question mark, Chris, is can you stay healthy?
Yeah.
I mean, when one guy comes back, somebody else goes down. And this is a league, it's all about health, man. And you get on the backside of the schedule, you're almost looking for guys off the street sometimes just to come in and fill out a practice. So if you can keep guys healthy, keep them rested, practices really kind of draw down a little bit as far as contact is concerned. Not that there was a lot of contact in practice at this time of the year anyway, but you really have to find your spots to get guys ready to go. Now, with that said, you go through a week or two and not really have a lot of contact and physical, you know, contact with the opposition. All of a sudden, that's how you get hurt. because your body isn't used to it. And that's why you see so many guys these days, when they come out of training camp and they get hurt the first week or two of the season, their bodies physically aren't ready for it yet, because there's so little contact in practice these days, and certainly in training camp.
It's all about health, and it's all about that quarterback. Because they still got the best in the world there. So if he's healthy and good to go, they've always got a chance. Klabes, I know you're going to be part of the all day broadcast. I don't know if you're going to be here all day.
But yeah, I'll be there all day, but I'll be there for sure. I'm looking forward to it.
11/20 is the day we celebrate the 100th anniversary of KMOX. Mike Claiborne, part of that. We're going to have a lot of people on the station all day long. It's going to be a great day. November 20th. It is Thursday of next week, so you're going to want to listen to that. Klabes, it was good to talk to you, and we'll do this again next week. All right.
Can't wait. That's Mike
Claiborne. I'm Chris Ronji. See you, my friend. When we come back, we're going to talk to the general manager of City SC and team president, Diego Gigliani. We'll talk about the MLS switching up their calendar. That's coming up in the 2027-28 season. That's next on KMOX. It is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Chris Ronji with you. And I don't know how many times we've talked to, Dale Shilley and other MLS dignitaries and City SC folks about the possibility of changing the MLS schedule. We knew that it was being talked about. Didn't realize it was as close as it was. And they are changing the format of the schedule, at least the timing of it, to coincide with leagues around the world. And to talk about that with us is the City SC president and general manager, Diego Gigliani, with us on KMOX. Diego, good to talk to you. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. Good to speak to you also.
You know, I'm more of a winter months kind of guy anyway, and I know the schedule starting in 2027-28 season is going to be different, but it will start in July. So tell us exactly what's going to happen here, how the format is going to change completely, because the season was coinciding with baseball season here in town, but now it's going to be a little different.
Yeah, yesterday was a really big turning point for the league and a great moment where I think we will look back on it as a transformational moment for the league and for the sport in the country. You know, we've been talking about this potential of changing calendar to align it with the best football leagues or soccer leagues in the world, which do play in the same calendar that we will now be playing in as of middle of 2027, which is calendar that starts in July and ends in May. There's a lot of implications of making those changes. So we've spent a good amount of maybe 2 years talking through this and analyzing and discussing, getting input from fans, from players. And yesterday, finally, it came together. All the MLS teams voted, and we agreed to move to that new calendar as of 2027. So when it comes to, you know, what that means for fans and winter months, you can imagine this was a huge consideration, especially for some teams that are even further north than we are, where playing games in the winter would impact them massively. We are impacted, just not as much as some of the other MLS teams, especially some of those in Canada also. So there's been a lot of debate around, can this even work? And I would say, really importantly, while the calendar change does include winter in the middle of it, really important to understand it is that there will be a mid-season break for the winter. So as of around middle of December or early December, the specifics are still being worked out. And until the beginning or middle of February, there will be no games anywhere. Mm-hmm. So this is not a radical change where all of a sudden people should expect to see 6, 7, 8 more games in December and January. That won't be the case.
Yeah, so middle of December, no games. From the middle of December through January, no games. And then February is when the season will basically restart. The playoffs are going to happen in May, which means that there's, if I have this right, there's about basically a month and a half off in the middle of the summer, and that's it. And then the season restarts again in mid-July.
That's going to be right, yeah. Yeah, so there's going to be several weeks off in the winter and a month and a half or so off in the summer. Just to for you to get a comparison with other global soccer leagues around the world, some of those best leagues that we're aligning our calendar to, they typically have a month off in the summer, maybe a week or max 2 weeks off in the winter. They don't stop as much as the MLS will stop because they aren't in climate that is as harsh winter-wise. So this is not a radical change relative to global soccer leagues. If anything, there will still be more time off for MLS players than there is in the other top five leagues in the world.
Talking with Diego Gigliani here on KMOX, team president for City SC. So you were talking a little bit about the benefits of having the season sort of coincide with FIFA. What does that do for us? Because if, you know, just thinking of it from a non-expert's perspective, you would think that if you were going to acquire some players from other leagues, it might be easier when those leagues aren't happening. But why is this now better for this particular league for it to coincide?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Chris. I mean, there's two main reasons why aligning our calendar to a FIFA calendar is better for the fans. You know, this was the main lens for all of our decision making. And there's two things that matter a lot. By aligning our calendar to the FIFA calendar, the first thing we will do is align our calendar to the FIFA breaks during the season. What happens now is there are several weeks during the year where soccer leagues, most soccer leagues, stop so that players that are on national teams are released from their club duties and they go to play international matches with their national teams. Here in the MLS, it's much more common for the club soccer to continue during those FIFA breaks, which means that from a fan base, you are losing some of your best players to go out and play with national teams during those weeks. That isn't great for fans. An example of that would be Sangbin for us. You know, he's a Korean player. He's been called up to the Korean national team. Because of that, he has missed some games of ours. So that's the first thing. We will avoid that by switching calendar. The second thing it will enable us is to align our transfer window to the main transfer window of all those other top leagues, which is basically the summer window. The summer window now for us is in the middle of the season, and that creates a lot of difficulties both for attracting and for selling players. Now that that will become effectively our preseason window, it will align with all those other top leagues. So it'll be easier for us to attract players that can come and arrive at the start of the season, and easier for us to sell players, which we will then obviously replace in that same window also. You know, much easier to do that in summer than how it works now, where we're needing to go into the transfer market in January and take players away from teams that don't want them to leave in the middle of the season. They need those players to achieve their sporting goals. So it either becomes players that we can't even recruit at all, or that we can only recruit playing significantly more than what we would if we were recruiting that player at the start or end of the season.
Diego, what are the implications for the Lamar Hunt Cup and, you know, CONCACAF and that sort of thing?
You know, those are some of the details that are still going to be worked out with the organizers of those tournaments. For the time being, those tournaments stay in the calendar where they are. And we've obviously looked at how does qualification to those tournaments work in a model where we are in a FIFA calendar and they remain on their calendar. You know, we have ways to adapt to whatever they choose to do. But conversations have started with them. They will obviously ramp up now that our calendar change has been voted on to see whether there is the possibility to align those calendars in any different way.
Just from a historical perspective here, why was the original MLS schedule set up the way it was?
I'm sure it was because of the avoidance of weather. So, I mean, it isn't that uncommon. You know, in Europe, you do have some Scandinavian markets, or Russia, for example. Some of those leagues, while they are in the Northern Hemisphere, they're that far up that they either need to stop again in December and January, or they flip the calendar and they do a, you know, February to November calendar. So it's not uncommon in some markets that are exposed to very, very northern cities and northern weather. So I'm sure that's what it was.
So I don't know if you covered this or not, but because there are certain cities that are going to have a tougher time in the winter as opposed to others in North America, will there be a more conscious effort to make sure that the games align with the climate, like what you would typically expect, so that maybe, you know, one city has several weeks in a row where they have home games, but then they might be on the road later if they're a warm weather climate as opposed to a colder weather climate?
That's exactly right, Chris. And that's where a lot of the time has been spent also. We have done many mock calendars so all the teams can see what it could look like in very practical terms, like in 2027 to 28, what dates would you have games at home or away? And we've done several of those and continued iterating and fine-tuning it so that we can try to minimize the number of home games in cold weather climates in December and February. You can imagine, you know, we've obviously cared about that and looked deeply into it. But you can imagine some cities that would look even more carefully at that because they will be even more impacted. So yes, that will happen. And it's definitely, it has been a key part to getting this approved, I would say.
The schedule change here for MLS is not going to happen until the 2027-28 season. So we're still going to be operating under the old schedule in the meantime. And I know that City fans who are listening to this right now, they have an eye on what it will look like in 2026, and they missed the playoffs. I know that coming in that first year was exciting for everybody, and being at the top of the table for that was a great welcome for the team and for the fans here. And we know that playoffs are the goal here. So what is this offseason going to look like as it gets deeper and we get closer to 2026?
I mean, it's a busy offseason. Anytime results don't go how you want them to go, you're looking at how you can make improvements to build a better squad and to prepare that squad to compete and make it to playoffs the following year. You know, we've been making changes, I would say, as early as the summer of this year. You can't make all the changes you want to make in one window, but you need to be diligent about planning correctly and making the right decisions when you can. So we started planning for 2026 as early as the middle of 2025, when we invested in younger players, high potential, reinforced some of our key positions, added defensive strength, but also attacking speed, replaced some players that were consistently getting injured. So we started planning for 2026 as early as this past summer, but we've continued. You know, we just announced a new sporting director a couple of weeks ago. We've been announcing several options that have been either taken or declined of players that are in our squad. We're obviously deep into head coach decision-making process now. So I think fans can expect to continue seeing improvements to our squad, including probably two or three starting players. And of course, that head coach decision is a really important one.
Do you have a timeline for that?
I mean, we have a timeline in as much as the sooner we get that head coach with us, the better we can be planning for the player movements for January. But to give you a reference point, you know, last year we announced our head coach early December, and that gave us enough time to involve him in the right decisions and be ready to go for the beginning of January when preseason starts. So that's a rough guide for when we would want to be in place to make some of those decisions.
And lastly, Diego, I know that City fans pretty excited to have Roman Berkey back for next season, to have him sign that extension, because there was some concern that he might end up going elsewhere.
I mean, anytime you have a great player, you're both happy and a little scared, you know, because great players, it then becomes hard to retain those great players. And I think everyone recognizes the amazing quality on the field that Roman Berkey has delivered from year one. But also the leadership that he provides for the team in the dressing room, the kind of ambassador-like role that he plays in the community. So we started conversations to renew him early in 2025. There's been many, many moments where we've kept close. He had other options of where he could go to, both within the MLS and outside of the MLS. And we were very happy that he committed his future here. And we're confident that we can continue building a winning squad around him. So, yeah, very excited for the fans, very excited for our team. Our players received it very positively, and Roman's here to make a difference.
Well, Diego, we've got some time to go before next season starts. A lot to happen between now and then. Hopefully we can have another conversation. Diego, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Chris.
Diego Gigliani, St. Louis City SC President and General Manager with us on the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Back with you Monday. Chris Ranji here on KMOX.